Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
So today, we have Brian Dunning. Now, Brian is the host of the Skeptoid podcast and has had written some books on this subject. So, a very interesting man. Thank you for being here, Brian.
Well, thank you, but let me ask, are you having me on as the conspiracy theorist or as the person who uses science and logic?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. I'm hoping the logic, because we try to balance it out. You know, I had Dr. Shermer on a couple of times, and I like logic. I'm the logical one. Actually, our one host is from InfoWars. That's Kevin, and he's off today. But so we do hear a lot of conspiracy, which I think 99% of it is just BS. So
it does make for some interesting radio, though, doesn't it?
Well, it does. You know, and I don't mind having people on. Listen, you know, if someone wants to come on and they have an idea and they have some evidence or they have something that they can talk about that creates a possible conspiracy, that's okay. I don't just write it off because it's called conspiracy, because it just means two people plotting out to do something. And so I try to keep an open mind to it, but once they start going off the deep end or selling something, then I'm usually not interested.
I was on one radio show, a similar subject. They were having me on. This is right when my book, Conspiracies Declassified, came out, and the publisher was having me do kind of a whole circuit of radio shows and everything. And I won't say what show this is, but they had three hosts, these two guys and a girl. And every time we went to a commercial break, a girl was just jumping on me. She was challenging me on every conspiracy theory that you can imagine. And once when she was out of the room, the two other guys, and again, this is during a commercial break, they said, "Hey, we apologize for what's her name. She's kind of our resident nutcase." And yeah, I mean, she was as far out there as any conspiracy theorist I've ever written on or researched. It was a wild program.
How do you think people get lost in this? I mean, because a lot of these people are college educated, they're working, they're normal, like they have a pretty good life, a house, wife, dog, two kids, you know, two cars. How do they get so caught up in it? I mean, because logically I look at things and you can hear some conspiracy, like the world's flat. And at first I'm just looking to see, well, can you prove that? Or how do you say that? What draws you to that conclusion? and I can talk rationally about it. But some people just hold on to it. Like, if the world is flat, that's it. Doesn't matter what you say.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the $64,000 question, is why do people, you know, otherwise smart people, functional people, people who are in the world and have lives and hold down a job, how can they be so far out there on some beliefs that are just obviously profoundly absurd? And of course, many conspiracy theories aren't that far out there. They're easily proven wrong, but they're not crazy. For example, you know, 9/11 conspiracy theories, depending on which one you want to look at, some of them are wildly insane. Someone just sent me an email insisting that the airplanes were holograms. Then, you know, other ones are, you know, well, you know, Bush and Cheney, they had these connections. They're, you know, more rational, more plausible. So conspiracy theorists are all over the spectrum, all over the spectrum. And in fact, all of us are somewhere along that spectrum. I think that's really important to keep in mind. The easiest person to fool is yourself, and we all believe things that aren't true. We like to know what those are so we can correct those beliefs, but we all do believe some things that are wrong. And the better we can recognize that, the better we can guard against, you know, becoming these people who are at the far end of the spectrum. But, I mean, to answer your question, it's a huge subject. Conspiracy theories are deeply compelling, kind of at an organic level. They confer upon the believer this position of having this secret knowledge, this insider position. I had a great conversation with someone who put it very well the other day. He was saying that Zionists, who are often the villains and many conspiracy theorists, or, you know, super Jews, as he called them, he said they're basically like Spectre in the James Bond series. They're behind everything. They're running the secret world behind the scenes. And that puts the conspiracy theorist, that makes him James Bond. So that's a great way to put it, because believing in a conspiracy theory, being the one who has this special secret knowledge, that's a powerful position to be in, and that's, you know, kind of a superpower that we all want to have.
So, well, it's interesting. That
would be my short answer.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Spectre, because in so many movies and TV shows in pop culture, you have these secret organizations that seem to run everything undetected. And they're powerful, and they can pull off any scheme at any time. And I wonder, even if people don't believe in that particular thing and realize that that movie is fiction, I wonder if they still get the idea that such schemes can be pulled off, or that something like what they see in the movies is potentially real.
I think so. I mean, a point that I often make when addressing this subject is, the whole idea how conspiratorial thinking is an evolved trait, right? I mean, the more likely we are to suspect threats out there, the more likely we are to be able to protect ourselves from those threats. And so, you know, the classic example of, you hear a rustling, the early proto-humans on the savannah heard a rustling in the grass. Some of them, who thought it was some malevolent force, they climbed a tree. The other ones who didn't, who said, oh, that's nothing to worry about. Well, occasionally they got eaten by the saber-toothed cat. And that happens often enough that over generations and generations, eventually this sort of native paranoia becomes a trait that natural selection selects for. And so we all got this native paranoia. But on the other hand, we all have our own life experiences, not just our education, but our work, our experiences, where we go, what news we listen to, things we learn about the way the world works. And we're able to temper that native conspiracy mongering with life experience. And since all of us have different life experiences, we temper that to different degrees. And I think that's one prime reason why some people are so far along the spectrum than other people. It's just that they have a different life experience, different things that they've been exposed to, different things they've learned about the way the world works, that either confirm or oppose those kind of native tendencies.
Yeah, I think now, I mean, there is a adverse selection on the conspiracy mongering, right? I mean, you look at people who are successful in the world, you know, forgiving the president for a moment. I mean, you know, people who tend to engage in this a lot tend to make less money. They tend to be less educated. They tend to be excluded from society either by choice or not by choice. But it seems like the selection is going in the opposite direction now. I mean, you can imagine that person that thinks so many people are to get him or her. They just can't leave the house. Or they won't take a job in a company that thinks, you know, I can't work at Monsanto because they're trying to take over the world, or I won't work for the government because, you know, they're involved in all these schemes. I mean, I think as much as nature sort of pushed this way of thinking, I think society is, just as you say, is now really pushing back.
That's interesting, and it's especially interesting to me because it's a subject that I would like to learn more about. And Joe, you probably, with your experience from a more academic perspective, you've probably been exposed to more research on this particular question than I have. But my experience, not based on research, but based on having been dealing with these people on a daily basis in my work and my writing, my experience has been that that you're wrong, basically. That in all walks of life, in all groups of people, yeah, you've got all kinds of people. And I think that for every person who says, I won't work at this company because of reason X, I will work at this company because of reason Y.
Yeah.
And it all just kind of balances out. You know, Elon Musk tweets out some pretty crazy stuff sometimes. And you mentioned Trump. I mean, how about the, oh my gosh, what's his name? The software security expert who had those legal problems in South America, McAfee.
Yeah.
I mean, the list goes on and on. I think we do have this kind of thinking kind of in all walks of life. I'm not persuaded that, that it's ever really valid to be able to paint any group with a large brush and have it be very accurate.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what, I think I'll give you that, and I, you know, it's clear that you can find conspiracy theorists anywhere. I mean, there are trends that on average, people in the, you know, people who are making a lot of money and people who are really educated tend to engage in this less, but, you know, I will say I have colleagues who are hardcore conspiracy theorists, so it's not absolute. I mean, it's more of a trend, and the slope isn't incredibly high either. So you could find Trump, who's, you know, above average education, one of the richest people in the world, but somehow is just spouting all of this stuff.
And you can look at his life experience, which has largely been in a position of extreme privilege, surrounded by people who are very similar to him, very limited experience to diverse points of view. And it becomes less surprising why he would be such a conspiracy theorist in general.
Yeah. But the answer is that I think if we were to go and say, let's talk to all people in Congress, right, and get their conspiracy views, I imagine there's going to be a lot, but I imagine it would be less than, say, if we got a bunch of taxi drivers into a room and asked them. You know, so... It's not that I would say that people who do well in the world have none. It's that I would say that they have some amount less. And I think perhaps where the research has to go is trying to figure out why there's less and then how much exactly that is. Because I would like to think that education is correlated with education, and I would like to think that education is correlated with having less conspiracy theories. Because, you know, I'm a professor, I'd like to think what I do matters, particularly in this area, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't.
No, I do agree with that. I do agree with that. I have seen that education is clearly associated with less belief in conspiracy theories. Again, that goes to my point. That's education is an important part of everyone's life experience. So...
Do you think there's
we are going to see that trend?
Do you think maybe it's more about the way the conspiracy makes the person feel, and not so much their education or wealth, because at the end of it makes you feel above others, not necessarily better than others, but it makes you feel like you're in the know, you have some sort of power, And perhaps a lot of people don't feel they have any power or any importance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a key component of why they're so attractive. I mean, I remember one fairly formative moment for myself. And again, I hate to resort to anecdotes, but this was my experience in this is when many years before I ever started doing science writing and everything, I was riding in the car with a friend, and he started telling me about all of these YouTube-style conspiracy theories, and this was before YouTube existed. And I was enraptured. He captured my mind 100%. I felt like, oh my gosh, I've had the wool lifted from in front of my eyes. It was an extremely persuasive moment. Fortunately, it didn't take me too long to realize it was all nonsense, but I remember the moment very clearly. And it was a profound moment. That temptation of forbidden knowledge, secret knowledge, being in a position of power that you weren't in 5 minutes ago before you'd ever heard this idea before, that was very powerful for me. And I think it continues to be for people today.
Yeah, I experienced the same thing when I watched Oliver Stone's JFK in the early 90s. You know, I was in high school, and it's just like, it was almost a tingly feeling watching this because, like, everyone was in on it, and it was as if there was this secret world going on that you could get access to. And it was almost, you know, you get to the end of the movie, and it's almost as if you're a brain in a jar and you've been exposed to some new reality in the Matrix because everything you knew was wrong, everything you saw wasn't real, and everyone was in on it. It was as if I had this new access.
Taking the red pill. Yeah, that's a very apt analogy in many ways. Yeah. Yeah. I as soon as you said the JFK film, I can think right away of friends who saw the same movie, went down that path, and never came back from it.
Now, in your book, you have a lot of conspiracy theories that you delve into. Which ones... and this is always a tough question for me, but which ones do you think are the best evidenced? So you have Rothschild.
The best evidenced?
Yeah. So some, you know, there'll be like no evidence that just really wouldn't convince anyone who has, you know, who needs evidence to be convinced. But others, you know, you could probably make a decent case for.
Well, you know, that always raises the question of what exactly do you consider a conspiracy theory or not? Because the publisher did want me to include a chapter. Actually, I pitched them on this, and they immediately said, yes, we need that, a chapter on conspiracy theories that turned out to be true. Now, to find those, you have to really kind of stretch the definition of what's a conspiracy theory. A point that I've often made is that no conspiracy theory has ever been proven true. But, of course, that requires a very specific definition of what's a conspiracy theory. So the ones that are the best evidence, I'd say, are the ones that least qualify as a conspiracy theory. And the one that I always give as an example is numbers stations. The shortwave radio broadcasts, a few still exist today, but they're very common during the Cold War. You could pick up any shortwave radio, tune it to a particular station on a particular time of day and a particular day of the week, and you would hear this mysterious broadcast of an automated voice reading out these long strings of numbers. And for many, many years, there were all kinds of conspiracy theories claiming that this is governments sending out instructions to their spies, which sounds very tinfoil hat. And I initially poo-pooed. And I was much more open to more mundane explanations like, oh, it's probably oceanographic research buoys transmitting the data or something like that. Until you realize that a recorded voice would be a very inefficient way of transmitting data. But then a lot of people don't know this, but a few days after 9/11, and people don't know it because there were other things in the news a few days after 9/11, a high-ranking Pentagon official was arrested inside the Pentagon for espionage, and the evidence against her was that she had been listening to this numbers station out of Cuba, typing the numbers into her laptop computer and decrypting them and getting her instructions from the Cuban government. And later, other people were also arrested and prosecuted for all being part of this Cuban spy ring. So the numbers stations turned out to be a conspiracy theory that was exactly true as advertised. And the evidence is all over the place, because it's not just in the United States. In Europe, in the UK, other spies have been arrested for and successfully prosecuted for espionage for listening to numbers stations. So that's exactly what it turned out to be. That's my favorite example of one with the best evidence that turned out to be true.
Okay.
When you get into theories that are outside of, you know, something straightforward, like, you know, JFK assassination or something, when people take one piece of evidence that they have or one thing that they can't answer and they build a theory around that without taking in the other evidence, that seems to be the biggest problem I see amongst conspiracy theorists.
Unfortunately, I lost the voice connection here for a minute, and I was not able to hear most of your question.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, when we get outside of some of those far-out conspiracy theories, and we get into something like the JFK assassination, where quite often people build their theory around one thing that's not explained, mm-hmm. and rather than a whole, and they just focus on that theory. That seems to be the biggest thing I see going on right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting example, because all of the various JFK conspiracy theories, and as we know, there are literally hundreds of them, and they are absolutely mutually exclusive. It's not possible that this one conspiracy theory was true and this other conspiracy theory was also true. They're mutually incompatible, and yet these people all consider themselves allies, because the one thing that they all agree on, and the one thing that's really the only thing that's important to them, is that the Warren Commission was a lie. As long as they're on board with that, and as long as you start from that as your default assumption and go off from there, you're right. You're on the right path, according to all the JFK conspiracy theorists. As long as you have this one thing, this one starting point, this one assumption that's that cannot be assaulted, you're all good. So that's really something we find in all of the many of the conspiracy theories. The same, because we have the same thing with the 9/11. The 9/11 Commission was wrong. As long as you start with that. Doesn't matter if the airplanes were holograms or if it was, you know, George Bush himself running in and blowing up Building 7 with a explosive vest, all these things I've heard.
You mean it wasn't?
You're right. Your conspiracy theorist is good enough.
Yeah. What was your most interesting conspiracy theory that you've had on the show?
So I like to answer this question with the moon landing hoax, that the Apollo program was a hoax and that we never ever went to the moon. Now, some people will say, well, that one's really not all that interesting because all the claims made by that are pretty easy to debunk. You know, things like, the angle of shadows in the photographs proving that it was taken in a studio, or the flag waving in the wind. When there was no wind on the moon, all these things are fairly easy to debunk, and we've pretty much all heard the simple debunkings of those. But the reason I hold that one up as the most interesting is because what you can learn from the actual science-based reasons that prove that humans from Earth were on the moon and did bring moon rocks back safely through the atmosphere, and they're now back here on Earth, all the links in that chain are proven by some really interesting and totally irrefutable science points. And I find that sharing the science behind those is something that everyone, conspiracy theorist or not, can say, whoa, that's really cool. That's really interesting. I just learned something new. I'd like to learn more about science. So that's where, for me, that's where the real interest lies, in the true science behind the mythology, if you will. Not in the mythology itself.
So So when you get to the 9/11, which seems to be the biggest kind of ongoing thing, I constantly see things coming up, and it never seems to stop. And how do you answer the primary questions, like, you know, building 7 being a, you know, controlled demolition and all the basic ones that come from that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really difficult question, because let me cite another quick example. My friend Phil Plait, the well-known astronomer, was on, this was years ago, he was on Joe Rogan's podcast, or actually Joe Rogan and Phil were both on Ken Jillette's podcast, debating whether the moon landing happened. And Joe Rogan at the time was a full throttle conspiracy theorist that we never went to the moon. And Phil is actually an astronomer. And
flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Actually knows everything about that. Nevertheless, Rogan kicked his butt on the show. And later, Penn had Phil back on to kind of do a sort of a failure mode analysis. How were you, who actually knows the answers to all these questions, how were you able to be so trounced in this debate? And Phil's answer was, it's really easy for a scientist to know the science better than the conspiracy theorist, but the conspiracy theorist is always going to know the pseudoscience way better than you are. Rogan came up with all kinds of stuff that Phil had never heard of and had no way to respond to. So when you ask me now, how do you respond to all these claims that the people make? I say, that's pretty dangerous ground. You really don't even want to start down that road, because you're not going to be able to answer a lot of it. I got into the trap of debating a Holocaust denier once, and they started talking about, you know, the angle of a hinge on this particular panel in the roof of a gas chamber, things I'd never heard of. And I had no way to respond to it. I didn't even know what this thing looked like. And I come off looking like I'm unprepared, like I don't have any science-based answers for some things that should be pretty obvious. When you're not limited to the truth and you can come up with anything you want, it's very easy to come up with things that the science-based perspective is not going to have a response to. So it's a dangerous road to go down to try and debate a conspiracy theorist. And it's not necessarily useful to try and answer all of their points. So what I will tend to do when I do an episode of my podcast on a conspiracy theory that's one of these huge conspiracy theories like JFK, I didn't even bother to address any of the conspiracy theory claims. Instead, you talk about the phenomenon and the sociology behind how and why people believe this kind of thing. At least that way, you're making a useful point and giving a useful an instructive lesson to listeners. I don't know. Have you guys had the same experience? Have you guys ever gotten in trouble trying to respond to some claims you'd never heard before?
Well, I think part of the problem isn't just with the conspiracy theorists, it's with the audience too, in that a conspiracy theorist is able to come up with like one weird thing, one anomaly or one point, and it might be true or false, but the audience will be swayed by one thing, as opposed to focusing on the entirety of all the evidence that's there. I mean, for the 9/11 Commission or the Warren Commission, I mean, they had lots and lots of witnesses, tons of evidence, tons of science, and you would have an audience member who listens to a debate and hears one point and then tosses out everything just based on one thing that a conspiracy theorist says. So I think, in terms of science education, we need to train people to look at the bulk of evidence rather than one arcane point, and not to be swayed so easily.
Which is a difficult proposition to do.
Yeah,
because it's very easy to say one thing and have people, oh, well, I'll toss out the entire, 20-some-odd volumes of the Warren Commission in exchange for what some dude says on YouTube in a 2-minute video.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very real problem because all audiences typically have very short attention spans. They're not going to go and do research. They're going to conclude whatever you've just told them to conclude. And, in broadcast media, you often have a very short time to do that. It's a very high risk arena.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, anyone can make a case about anything, and anyone can gather quote-unquote evidence to support any claim, right? It's just as long as you only pick evidence that supports your claim and exclude everything else, you have a good case. I mean, you did an episode on the satanic ritual abuse, and that was built entirely on just picking out little things that would suggest something and excluding all other science and evidence in favor of it.
Yeah. But actually, what's interesting, you bring this up as sort of an unfair strategy that the conspiracy theorists will use to promote their viewpoint. I actually rely on the same strategy myself to promote my science-based perspective. Is I no longer engage in debates, or I no longer give anyone, I don't even have comments on the website. I don't give anyone a chance to respond to the points that I make, because all that can do is confuse the audience. Instead, I make my argument completely one-sided. I present what we know and how we know it. And I don't give the slightest opportunity for any misinformation to work its way in. I think that's probably the best way to make a point in the way today's fast-paced short attention span media works.
Yeah, as this QAnon conspiracy was getting big in, well, at least in media coverage in August, one of the Q people started harassing me, and they went through my Twitter feed and picked out a handful of pictures and put them together into a collage to try and make the case that I was a devil-worshipping deep stater. And
wonderful. I want to see that.
Yeah, so when I look at it, I'm like, gosh, they actually did a pretty good job, and I could probably buy this. But
wow.
you would have to ignore the other 500 pictures on Twitter that don't make me look like a devil-worshipping deep stater, right? So it's, you have to have a very selective view of the evidence to sort of pull these things off.
You're reminding me of the Bible Code, which you may know was originally a book written by a guy who was claiming that all of these predictions about the future and everything are encoded in the Bible using a letter spacing code. You know, like if you look at every 15th letter starting on page 6, then it spells out a sentence. And when I did my episode on this, I quickly learned that in any large enough body of text, and it doesn't even have to be all that large, nowhere near as large as the Bible, and the right piece of software, it's trivial to find just about any phrase you want with this software that automatically does these searches through the text. And so you can type in your name. I can type in Brian Dunham is the devil, and I guarantee you that's in the Bible. Just software can find it. So exactly the point you're making. Yeah, you come up with something like that that looks really, really improbable. And people don't realize, you know, as far as the law of large numbers works, it's actually extremely probable. But when it's framed as being extremely improbable, it can be very persuasive.
I mean, I noticed the same thing with the movie Zeitgeist that was big with conspiracy theorists for a while. Mm-hmm. And it tried to draw correlations between, you know, things in the Bible and things in other religions. And all it really relied on was we found a few things that are similar between this and that, and then it ignored everything else that was completely different.
Yeah, and even most of those things that they found that they said matched up were straight out fabrications. Hmm. The guy that made that movie, who made it in his New York art studio, having basically never left his apartment or been out in the outside world, but somehow figured out all of the geopolitics of the entire globe. That section of his movie was based almost entirely upon the work of this one author. He's a woman whose name I don't recall, but her book was, she's kind of a New Age spiritualist, and she kind of had all this paganistic criticisms of organized religion. And so she just kind of made stuff up. And he fairly uncritically parroted much of that book for that section of Zeitgeist. So it was horribly sourced. But in addition, he then went the extra step, as you say, and used only the information that supported his position and ignored the much larger body of information that refuted it.
You know, one thing I noticed was a lot of that behavior of the conspiracy theorist of taking one point and making the decision on that rather than the whole entire amount of evidence is also turning up a lot in our court cases. The ones on TV are the ones you see on court TV and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I often think how scarily true it is that if I decided to be a lawyer, I'd be really good at it. Just based on this, all this experience of how easy it is to persuade people of things that either are or are not true, depending on which you want to do. That's a very sobering point, though.
Well, that's what's very good about having an adversarial court system, and for all its faults. I mean, if you only focused on the evidence that the prosecution brings forward, everyone would be guilty. Right, but you have a defense there to sort of show other evidence and to put the prosecution's claims into context. And oftentimes what you find is that, you know, if you only look at one side in isolation, you get a very jaundiced view. But if you look at everything together, then you have a much more full view of evidence. And I think, people don't always realize that. Like we have, you know, these national scandals going on now where you'll see, you know, one cable news story run with one piece of evidence that isn't put in context or questioned or challenged, and you could draw one really wild conclusion from it, you know, but you're not picking up on everything. So
we could talk about that all day. Prosecutors' offices have press departments, and they put out press releases all the day. all the time. Do you think those press releases are fair and balanced, or do you think they promote the perspective that the defendant is guilty and here's whatever we want to say that hasn't been in court yet and so is unchallenged? So the news reporting that you'll often hear about cases that have not yet gone to trial are nearly always based exclusively upon prosecutors' press releases. The defense rarely has that luxury because before you're going into court, if you're going to fight a case, you don't want to tell the prosecution what your defense is going to be, so you can't put out a press release. So the news reporting is often biased in favor of prosecutors, and that's a problem, too.
Now, on your newest book, what are people going to get from that? Like, what is it that you are trying to give to the readers?
So, Conspiracies Declassified is it's a collection of 50 kind of fun and wild conspiracy theories. It's intended to be the ones that people have already heard of. When the publisher first contacted me, they said, well, gee, 50 is a big number. Do you think you can come up with 50? I said, well, let me see. And I went to my database of podcast episodes that I've done, and I exported just the category of conspiracy theories, and there was 210. So I said, yeah, I think we can come up with 50. We had to put a little list way down. But so this is not an academic book. This is not, a heavy book. It's more fun. It's light reading. And the idea is that any conspiracy theory that you've actually heard, whoever you are and whatever that conspiracy theory is, it's probably in here. And in just a few pages, we give kind of a light and fun, but absolutely fact-based and thoroughly referenced explanation of what actually happened. Here's what the popular version of the story is. Here's what actually happened. And as often as we have that information, I would include, here's how it got twisted, why it got twisted, and why people tend to believe this part of it that's not true. That's always where the most interesting part of the story is. And I enjoy that aspect of conspiracy theories very much, is when there's a great story behind how and why it came to be. That's where I think you can really engage the public's interest and imagination. It's what I try to do the most in all of my episodes, and I think it was very successful in this book. So that's kind of my pitch for the book.
So I would encourage listeners to check out the Skeptoid podcast if they haven't yet. Now, you do more than just conspiracy theories. You also have a lot of episodes on urban myths and pseudoscience. I think one of my favorite episodes is on cupping. And I wound up sharing that quite a bit during the Olympics a few years ago because...
During the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah, just because Michael Phelps and other Olympians were doing the cupping and people thought, oh my God, well, this must be good. But the truth it doesn't really support this, right?
It doesn't remotely support that. It's very much an attention-seeking behavior. These alternative medicine schemes that give you something obvious like a cupping bruise. You know, you're showing the world, hey, look how enlightened I am. And it's a silly thing. It's a silly, silly thing. They've actually tried to legitimize the cupping by giving it a better name. They call it a myofascial decompression, I believe. Myofascial decompression therapy, which sounds very sciencey. And of course, anyone who understands basic physics knows that when you have something suctioned to your skin, you're pushing on the skin just as much as you are pulling on it. So it's not really decompressing anything at all. So, I mean, the whole thing is so silly and pseudoscientific to begin with. It's nowhere near as ancient as it's commonly promoted because, you know, this whole idea of ancient wisdom is something the public is always hungry for. If it's ancient, it's therefore enlightened, and so people love that. So they try and market just about any alternative therapy with the claim of ancient wisdom.
Now, why do you think that is?
Yeah.
Because it's so anti-modernity, and science has given us so many great things, and, you know, if we could live in any time, now would be it, as opposed to any time in the past, but somehow people want to find out what the ancients did, or do the paleo diet. I want to eat like cave people, or something like that, and I don't understand why.
As soon as you bring up food, I mean, that opens an enormous Pandora's box. Anytime you've got people in the world whose needs are satisfied and they're comfortable, they don't have any real problems anymore, so they have to try and make some up. And so, you know, that's why we have this whole idea of, it's basically the Western esotericism movement that it got really big in the 1970s. First, we're seeking out everything that's Chinese, looking for Chinese wisdom. It's looking for spiritual meaning in everything that you do. You want the things that you eat, the things you do, the things you practice to have meaning and to be spiritual. It's this whole kind of enlightenment phase. And while there's no science behind it, there's a lot of psychology behind it. And, you know, attention seeking, like the Michael Phelps thing, that's just one small part of it. It actually crosses over very well into conspiracy theories, because when you have this enlightened knowledge, that's very similar to the super secret knowledge that we were talking about that conspiracy theorists are attracted to. So this whole idea of having the special enlightenment is very similar psychologically to that.
So what do you think about current politics as it gets involved, without getting into party, but just with, you know, Trump and all the conspiracies and stuff, and Alex Jones and all that? Where do you think it's going to go? Like, where is it headed with things being cut from, like, YouTube and Twitter and all that for Alex Jones? Do you think this is going to lead to cleaning up conspiracy theories?
No, I don't. I think it's going to cool down. I don't think we're going to be in a different position afterwards, you know, say 5-10 years from now. I don't think things will be any different than they were 5-10 years ago. The whole thing that's going on right now, we are indeed a very divided society right now. It's very much us versus them. If we look at the things that our friends post on Facebook, probably some minority of those friends are from the opposite tribe, whichever one that is, and the majority of them are from our tribe, whichever one that is. But the gulf between them is definitely wider than it has ever been. And I actually wrote a little piece on this morning because to me, what's going on now smacks much more of game theory than it does of party politics. And the part of game theory I'm referring to is kind of the basic tenet, game theory 101, which shows that people would rather consider themselves to be the winner in a situation, even if it costs them money or costs them a position or costs them something, than they would consider themselves a loser, even if they come out ahead. And that's very interesting. And that's why people will pay more for organic food, because they're winning. They've come out behind. They've gotten exactly the same product, but they've paid more money for it. They've come out behind, but they consider themselves to have won because they've selected the more enlightened product. And kind of that's what's going on now. We have the what's being called the alt-right really has very little to do with conservative politics. It has to do with this game theory-based obsession with winning. When we see political correctness, people will view political correctness as sort of this unearned grace being conferred upon marginalized classes. And when someone else is being given attention, that means that you lose. And so we want to kick that down, fight back to that. We want to win. We want to kick their ass. We want to be the cool ones. So we strike back at political correctness. And that's game theory. It's not conservative politics. It's a fascinating situation. That this whole alt-right movement has been closely associated with the Republican political party is actually doesn't make all that much sense. It probably makes more sense than if it were the liberals, but it's not about party politics. It's about game theory. It's a very nascent idea that I'm sort of working on, starting to develop, but that's what I think is going on.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting time. So now, if people want to get a hold of you, or they want to send you a theory, how do they do that?
God, when I was on Rogan's podcast, we asked people to send me conspiracy theories. I don't think any email inbox has ever exploded as much as mine did. So, yeah, skeptoid.com is where the podcast is, and you can reach me on Facebook and Twitter at Brian Dunning. Even just email me, brian@skeptoid.com. Pretty easy stuff. I really enjoy doing the podcast and talking about this stuff. I'm very fortunate to be able to do it for a living. And, I'd love to engage with people, so come on down and check it out.
And speaking of that, how did you feel now about the Rogan interview? Like, what's your look on it now?
Well, the problem with the Rogan interview is not the actual, if you go to the 3-hour version, it's actually a fairly intelligent conversation most of the way through. But unfortunately, what they did is they cut it down to 24 minutes, and it was fairly dishonestly edited. It clearly was edited to make me look like a complete jerk and unknowledgeable about anything. And that's what people see. So unfortunately, the Rogan interview, I wouldn't have done it if I'd known that that's what they were going to do with it. And that's unfortunate. But he's super influential. He's got an enormous audience. And there's a lot of good that can be done engaging with him. And that's not what happened when I went on. He does not care to be challenged on conspiracy theories and other things. And if you do, you take a big risk. And I took that big risk, and I lost. They put out that edited version, and to this day, I mean, that was 4 or 5 years ago that I was on, and to this day, I get these really brief, obscenity-laden emails from his fans who just watched the 24-minute edit and just want to cuss me out.
But do you think that Joe Rogan has changed over the years? And I think maybe you were sort of a spark that sort of pushed that, because he has had a lot more science-based guests on, and I think his attitudes have sort of come more in line with science.
Very much. I believe he has very much changed. He has the ability to be a force for good. And he does have on great guests, and he told me he no longer believes in any of the conspiracy theories, and I believe him when he tells me that. People generally don't lie about what they believe. So I do believe that he's come around on many of them, at least. That wasn't so evident when I was on. I would still encourage people to go on the show, to use his platform to promote good information. Just be careful.
Well, again, it's been a real pleasure. Great to meet you, and thanks for taking the time to come on our show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff, so it's always fun.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.